The Green Bay Packers are one of the oldest teams in the NFL, playing in the league's smallest city and winning more NFL championship titles than any other franchise.
And after more than a century, they still have the same owner, their fans.
Fans across the world form tight bonds, like Ireland's Stephen O'Brien, who the Packers named their 2025 International Fan of the Year.
Seeing how much of a family it was has just been incredible, which is what has sort of strengthened my relationship with Green Bay and coming back time and time again and trying to share that with other people over here.
A new book traces how the small market, publicly owned franchise became one of the most successful pro sports teams.
The team bridges politics, unites generations, and pumps about $500 million in economic impact to the greater Green Bay area each year.
Tom Nelson of Appleton is the author of The Green and Gold Standard, A People's History of the Green Bay Packers. Nelson writes, "The Packers are the fulfillment of the American promise, the actualization of the American dream." And I wondered, is he overstating their importance?
It is not over the top. It is no exaggeration. If it were, I would not have spent a year researching and writing this book. The reason why I say that is every element, seemingly every element of the Packers today and throughout its history, really does embody the American ethos. You have a small town that decides this is going to be a football town. And even though it's 1/30th the size of the largest city in the league, they are going to do everything it takes to keep this pro football team in a small market. And they go up against obstacle and hurdles and insurmountable hurdles in some cases. And every time they defy the odds and they come back. And the way that they do that is with community. And they do that through a nonprofit corporation that is established in 1923, which has persisted now for the following 103 years.
So the Packers, they've held these public stock offerings in the history. You write about that. Can you talk about where are the financial gains here for this team under this shareholder model?
There are no financial gains. All gains, all of the profit, all the earnings is invested right back into the team. So the shares that are outstanding, there are about 500,000 shareholders, millions of shares outstanding, and they do not pay dividends. They are simply proof that you are an owner. For some of the shareholders, it comes with voting rights. For others, diluted voting rights. Depends on what issue this shareholder purchased their stock. And so that is the sum total value. And people are more than happy to, you know, 500,000 people have spent hundreds of dollars on pieces of paper that are worth just that.
Well, Curly Lambeau, who you write about, founded the Packers, led the team as a player, coach, and manager for 30 years. How did Lambeau figure out how to turn this small town football team into a national powerhouse? And then would the Packers be here without him?
Packers would not be here today without Curly Lambeau. But the reason why I call this book A People's History of the Green Bay Packers, there were larger in life figures like Curly Lambeau, like Vince Lombardi, George Calhoun, Bob Harlan. But what really sustained the organization and what got them going in the first place were the people, whether it was a clutch of local business and civic leaders, whether it was particularly talented football players who were working on a farm or did not do it professionally, that Curly Lambeau spotted and said, this person has a lot of talent. I can make them a really good player, which he did time and again. And that was part of Curly's genius. So what Curly brought to the table is he was able to pick out talent. He was able to motivate players. And he was very charismatic. He had a huge following. And then that was complemented by, I would say, one of the unsung heroes of Packers history, and that was George Calhoun, who was the PR organ of the Packers and was also the editor of the Green Bay Press Gazette. And without the partnership of the Press Gazette, the Packers would not have become what they are today, because it wasn't like, okay, we've got this great football coach and they're playing football games in Hagemeister Park on the east side of Green Bay. They needed someone who was tapped into the country's sports writers network and someone who knew how to use a newspaper to build earned media, free media, and from there build a following. And that's what George Calhoun did. And he was a perfect, ideal partner with Lambeau.
So during the season, people aren't really thinking about the business angle. They're thinking about these unforgettable games that have made them love the team year after year. And you write about October of 83. You stay up late on a school night. You go to your first Packers game at age 7. And you're the guest of the elementary school janitor who has season tickets. How did you become a Packers fan that night?
Well, that was the night that I became a Packers fan. And, you know, this is also my introduction, I think, also reinforces the subtitle People's History of the Green Bay Packers, because I don't begin my book with Vince Lombardi or Curly Lambeau. I begin with Steve Vanderloop, who was a janitor of Janssen Elementary School in Combined Blocks. And he was the one who opened up the gym at Janssen Elementary every Sunday morning for my dad to hold services. And he has season tickets. And we weren't able to go to any of the games because back then the Packers weren't that good and they just played for noon kickoffs, which ran into interrupted church services. So lo and behold, the Packers get a Monday night slot and Steve offers my dad and myself tickets. My dad says yes, my mom says no. But fortunately, it was the one time my dad was able to prevail on my mom. Went to the game and it was just absolutely mesmerizing. And I just got the bug and I've been a Packers fan ever since.
You write, for a family of four to go to a Packers game in 2025, it costs roughly $1,700 for the experience. Can you contrast the affordability issues today to the janitor's season tickets in the early 80s?
Right. I mean, compared to 40 years ago, it is not as affordable. I would also say what might not make it as affordable is the economy that we live in today, in which income inequality is so much more than 40 years ago. And so the purchasing power of families has stagnated for a lot of families. And so it makes it more difficult. But by and large, the season ticket holders has been pretty stable. There's 150,000 names that are on the season ticket wait list now. The estimated time to get off it is like 50 or 60 years. So that tells me, yes, tickets are much more expensive. But just like what it was with their forefathers, people like Andrew Turnbull and George Calhoun back in the early 20th century, this was more than just about money. This was never about money. And so in this case, I think people look at this, yes, it is an expense, but there is something special about it. And even though it is a huge number, well, I mean, this is the NFL, and the NFL is big bucks.
So let's talk about those eyeballs on TV sets. In the Green Bay, Fox Valley market during some seasons, you write more than 80% of TV sets are tuned into games, the highest percentage of any team in the NFL. How valuable are TV contracts and this viewership for this team's coffers?
Viewership is no doubt a major source of revenue. The Packers, despite being a small market team, they often capture some of the larger national audiences when they are on Monday night or Thursday night football or in the playoffs. But more important than the amount of money that is generated is the 1961 Sports Broadcasting Act, which takes all of the revenue generated by the media contracts and splits it evenly among 32 teams, which does not exist in any other business, in any other industry, in a capitalist economy outside of Scandinavia. That allows the NFL to collectively negotiate these major, major deals. And if it wasn't for shared revenue, if it wasn't for the Sports Broadcasting Act, the Packers simply would not exist. Hmm. They would not be able to generate the same amount of revenue that comes from local games and games that are in New York and Los Angeles and Dallas. It just simply would not be possible. If that had not happened back in 1961, the Packers would have died a death in the 1960s, even with Vince Lombardi. But recently, the NFL in 2024 passed what's called the private equity rule. And the private equity rule allows 31 of 32 teams, not the Packers, to sell up to 10% of the valuation of their team. The average value of an NFL team is $9 billion.
Wow.
Times 10%, every single team, except for the Packers, has access overnight to $900 million. Mm. Currently, the Packers are now at a $900 million disadvantage compared to every single team in the league. How long can the Packers last under those terms? I don't know.
I want to land, though, on salaries here. Quarterback Jordan Love became the highest paid player in Packers history. He inked his $220 million four-year contract in 2024. What do you think Curly Lambeau would think of that and of Titletown today?
I think that if he were walking down Washington Street on the east side and he looked to the southwest, saw the stadium and saw his name, I mean, I think his head would explode. Curly Lambeau would no doubt not be able to process that, but he also would have a difficult time processing two things. One, that his team is now worth over $8 billion and the team is still around.
Tom, thank you for your book. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be back on.
That is Tom Nelson of Appleton, author of The Green and Gold Standard, A People's History of the Green Bay Packers.